A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
The average American moves 11.7 times in their lifetime. And yet most people treat every single move like it's the first time anyone has ever had to put boxes in a truck. We're right in the thick of peak moving season. 70% of moves happen between May and September. So Daniel sent us a prompt that's basically a cry for help from anyone staring down a lease end date. He wants to know the pro tips for making a move between apartments as seamless as possible. How do you arrange a move that's almost effortless? And how do you help the movers work as efficiently and quickly as possible?
This is one of those topics where the gap between how most people do it and how you should do it is enormous. And it all comes down to something I think of as inverse effort. The idea is that 80% of the work of a smooth move should happen before the movers ever ring the doorbell. If you're scrambling while they're standing there, you've already lost.
The thesis is basically, the best move is the one where the movers never have to ask you a single question.
And I want to lay this out in three phases. Phase one is the pre-move logistics, which is everything you do in the days before. Phase two is the morning of orchestration, which is really a two-hour window where you set the stage. And phase three is the post-departure cleanup, which is a 30-minute reset that nobody ever talks about. The core idea is that a seamless move isn't about packing better boxes. It's about eliminating decision points for the movers so they operate at maximum throughput.
Maximum mover throughput. That's the kind of phrase that makes me want to take a nap. But I also recognize it's exactly right. So let's define terms. What does almost effortless actually mean here? Because nobody thinks moving is effortless.
It means you're not making decisions on moving day. You're not rifling through a drawer at the last minute wondering if you should pack the spatulas or leave them. You're not standing in the doorway of the new apartment trying to remember which room you decided would be the office. All of those micro decisions have been made in advance, and the movers are just executing a plan you already laid out. That's the effortless part. The effort happened, but it happened on Tuesday night with a glass of wine, not on Saturday morning with three strangers watching you panic.
Why do most people make this harder than it needs to be? Because I've helped friends move, and it's always the same flavor of chaos.
Most people treat moving as a single-day event. They think, the movers come at 8, I'll figure it out. But moving is a logistics operation. It's a supply chain problem with one origin and one destination. And the reason it goes wrong is that people don't realize every time a mover has to stop and ask a question, the entire operation pauses. I call this the zone of no decisions. Every time a mover says, "Where does this go?" or "Should I wrap this?" you lose somewhere between 45 and 90 seconds of labor. If you've got a three-person crew working a six-hour move, and they're stopping to ask questions even just a few times an hour, you can lose 2 to 3 hours of cumulative productivity.
The movers aren't slow. They're just waiting for you to make up your mind, and you're paying for every minute of their confusion.
And that brings me to the first concrete system, which is the pre-labeling protocol. This is where you use color-coded painter's tape. Blue for the bedroom, green for the kitchen, red for the living room, yellow for the bathroom. Every single box gets a strip of the appropriate color on at least two sides, and every piece of furniture gets a strip too. Then, before the movers arrive at the new apartment, you go there and tape a matching color swatch on each doorframe. The movers walk in, they see blue tape on a door, they look down at the box with blue tape, and they put it in that room. Nobody asks you anything.
This is the Dewey Decimal System for furniture.
And it's so simple that people dismiss it, but the time savings are real. I read about a case study from Chicago, May of last year. 2-bedroom apartment move. One client pre-labeled everything with the tape system and had all the furniture disassembled before the crew showed up. The move took 3.5 hours. Another client in the same building, same floor plan, did none of this. The move took 6 hours and 45 minutes. Same crew, same truck. The difference was entirely in the pre-move preparation.
That's nearly double the time. and at professional mover rates, which are, what, $150 to $200 an hour for a three-person crew in a major metro area? That's a difference of several hundred dollars.
In that case, it was probably a difference of $600 or $700. And that brings me to the flat pack furniture trap. This is one of the biggest hidden costs in any move. People think, I'll just let the movers handle the IKEA furniture. They're professionals. And they are. But they charge by the hour, and disassembling a MOM bed frame takes a professional about 12 minutes. It takes you maybe 25 minutes. But you're not paying yourself $150 an hour.
The math is, spend 25 minutes with a hex key on Thursday night, or pay someone $30 to do it in 12 minutes on Saturday morning. Except now, you've also got to factor in that while they're disassembling the bed, the other two movers are standing around or working around them, so the real cost is higher.
And this is where the specific tool list matters. You need three things for almost all flat pack furniture: a 4mm hex key, a Phillips No. 2 screwdriver, and a rubber mallet. That's it. 90% of IKEA disassembly is those three tools. Have them laid out the night before. Go room to room and take apart anything that can be taken apart. Bed frames, desk legs, table leaves. Bag the hardware in a zip-top bag and tape it to the largest piece of the furniture it belongs to. Label that bag with the same colored tape.
The hardware bag taped to the furniture is one of those things that feels obvious once you hear it, but I've never seen anyone do it. Usually it's a frantic search through a junk drawer 3 months later.
Then you find the bag of bolts and you have no idea what they belong to, so you keep them forever in a drawer of mysterious hardware. Now let's talk about the box weight ceiling, because this is where people sabotage themselves without realizing it. Most people overpack boxes. They cram everything in until the flaps barely close. And the result is a box that weighs 60 or 70 pounds and requires two people to carry, or one person to carry very slowly and carefully. Neither is efficient.
What's the right weight?
The 40-pound rule. No box should exceed 40 pounds, which is roughly the weight of a standard Czech suitcase. The test is simple. If you can't lift it with one hand to waist height, it's too heavy. Heavy boxes slow down the carry cycle. Instead of a mover grabbing a box and walking at a normal pace, they're bracing, adjusting their grip, taking slower steps. Multiply that across 50 or 60 boxes, and you've added an hour to your move. Plus, heavy boxes increase injury risk, and if a mover gets hurt, the whole operation stops.
You're saying it's actually better to have more boxes that are lighter than fewer boxes that are packed to the brim.
Box count is not the metric you're optimizing for. You're optimizing for carry cycles per hour. A mover can carry a 35-pound box at a brisk walk and be back for the next one in 90 seconds. A 65-pound box takes twice as long and requires more care. And here's the counterintuitive part, lighter boxes also reduce breakage. When a box is manageable, the mover is less likely to set it down hard or drop it. They're not exhausted by the fifth trip.
The 40-pound rule is basically a throughput optimization disguised as a safety tip.
That's exactly what it is. And this connects to another misconception, which is that you save money by packing everything yourself. The reality is, if you pack poorly, unlabeled boxes, mixed items from different rooms, boxes that are too heavy, the movers spend extra time sorting and handling on the back end. You pay for that in hourly labor. Professional packers are fast because they have a system. If you're going to pack yourself, which most people do, you have to adopt a system that mimics what the pros do.
We've covered the pre-move prep, but what happens when the movers actually show up? Because that's where I think most people lose the plot. They've packed, they're tired, and suddenly there are strangers in their apartment expecting direction.
This is the morning of orchestration phase, and it starts with something I call the path of least resistance. The night before the move, you need to create a clear, unobstructed path from the innermost room of your apartment to the truck. That means rolling up all rugs, moving shoes and coats out of hallways, relocating small furniture like side tables and floor lamps to one designated staging area. The movers should be able to walk a straight line from any room to the exit without stepping over anything or squeezing past obstacles.
I assume you also need to measure things.
You absolutely need to measure things. A standard interior doorway is 30 inches wide. A standard sofa is 36 inches wide. If you discover this discrepancy on moving day, you lose 30 minutes while everyone stands around figuring out how to angle it through, whether the legs come off, whether you need to remove the door from its hinges. You should measure every doorway, hallway, and stairwell in the new apartment before moving day. If something won't fit through a door, you need to know that in advance so you can plan the disassembly or the pivot.
The pivot being the literal maneuver where you turn the sofa on its side and angle it through, not a metaphorical pivot.
The classic sofa pivot. And it works, but it takes time and it takes coordination, and you don't want to be discovering that it's necessary while the movers are standing there holding your couch in the hallway. Now, if you're in a multi-unit building, there's a whole additional layer, which is the elevator protocol.
The elevator is the bottleneck in any apartment building move. Everyone knows this, and yet nobody plans for it.
Because they assume the elevator will just be available. It won't. In most buildings, you need to coordinate with building management to reserve the service elevator or book a specific time slot. Some buildings require a deposit. Some require proof of insurance from the moving company. You need to have all of this sorted at least a week in advance. But beyond that, there's a technique called elevator staging. You station one person at the elevator on the departure floor to load and another person on the arrival floor to unload. This eliminates the 2 to 3 minute wait per trip while the elevator travels empty.
Instead of the mover riding the elevator down with a load, coming back up empty, and repeating, you've got a relay system where the elevator is never waiting for a person, and a person is never waiting for the elevator.
And in a building with 20 or 30 floors, those 2 to 3 minutes per trip add up fast. If you're doing 15 elevator trips, you've just saved 30 to 45 minutes. The same principle applies to walk-up buildings, but the technique is different. In a walk-up, you use a stair relay. One mover at the bottom of the stairs, one at the top, passing items between them. This can save about 20% of the time compared to both movers going up and down each trip.
The relay converts vertical movement into horizontal passing, and horizontal passing is faster.
And less exhausting for the movers, which means they maintain their pace longer. A tired mover is a slow mover. Now let's shift from the departure side to the arrival side, because a seamless move isn't just about getting stuff out. It's about getting it in efficiently. And this is where the box Tetris strategy comes in.
I like that.
Professional movers load the truck in a specific order. Heavy items go first against the cab wall. That's appliances, furniture, large heavy boxes. Then medium boxes get stacked in the middle. Then light boxes go on top. The reason is structural. Heavy items form a stable base. But it's also about unloading order. The first things into the truck are the last things out, and you want those to be the heavy items that go to the back of the new apartment. If you pre-sort your boxes by weight and mark them H, M, or L on the top with a marker, the movers can grab and load without stopping to assess weight. They see the letter, they know where it goes in the truck.
You're essentially pre-sorting the loading sequence before they arrive. You're doing the cognitive work so they can do the physical work without pausing.
And this is another decision point elimination. The mover doesn't have to heft the box, guess the weight, and decide where it goes. They read the letter, they load it. Now let me talk about something that sounds small, but causes a disproportionate amount of chaos, the last box trap.
The box of essentials that you keep with you.
Which is a mistake. The conventional wisdom is that you pack one box of essentials, toothbrush, phone charger, a change of clothes, and you keep it with you in your car. The problem is that people pack this box 3 hours before the move. They're tired, they're guessing at what they'll need, and inevitably they forget something critical. And then at 10 p.m. in the new apartment, they're tearing through boxes looking for a phone charger.
I've lived that exact evening. It's miserable.
The better system is the go bag. A single duffel bag with 24 hours of clothes, toiletries, all your chargers and cables, important documents, any medications, and maybe a roll of toilet paper because you will forget to buy toilet paper. The go bag stays in your car, not in the truck. It never leaves your possession. Everything else goes on the truck. The go bag is not a box, it's a bag, because a bag is easier to carry and you can sling it over your shoulder when you're also carrying a pizza.
The distinction between a bag and a box matters psychologically. A box feels like part of the move. A bag feels like your personal luggage. You don't lose track of your luggage.
And the go bag should be packed at least 2 days before the move, not the night before. That way you have time to remember things. You'll wake up in the middle of the night and think, I forgot my contact lens solution, and you can add it.
We've covered the departure side prep, the morning of orchestration. Let's talk about what happens at the new apartment before the movers arrive, because I feel like that's a blind spot for most people.
It's a huge blind spot. Most people show up at the new apartment at the same time as the movers and then scramble to figure out where things go while the movers are standing there holding boxes. The new apartment prep checklist should be done before the movers arrive. Turn on all the lights so nobody's fumbling for switches. Open all the doors so the movers can see the layout. Lay down drop cloths or old sheets on high traffic areas, especially if it's raining or snowing. And here's the one that gets overlooked every single time. Have a trash bag and a pair of scissors in every room.
The universal missing object.
The number of times someone has to say, "Does anyone have scissors?" during a move is staggering. You need scissors to open boxes. You need scissors to cut tape. You need scissors to free items that are wrapped in protective plastic. If there's a pair of scissors in every room, nobody has to leave the room to find scissors, and nobody has to ask where the scissors are. It eliminates 5 micro interruptions over the course of the afternoon.
This is the kind of detail that sounds absurdly trivial until you've lived through a move without it, and then it's the only thing you can think about.
The trash bag is just as important. You're going to generate a mountain of packing paper, bubble wrap, and tape. If there's a trash bag in each room, the movers can unwrap items and immediately dispose of the packing material, rather than leaving it in a pile on the floor that you'll have to deal with later.
Let's zoom out for a moment. We've talked about a lot of specific tactics, but I want to pull together the philosophy here. The through line in everything you've described is that you're shifting the cognitive load from moving day to the days before. You're front-loading all the decisions so that the day itself is pure execution.
And I think there's a deeper point here about how we think about labor. When you hire movers, you're not just paying for their muscles, you're paying for their time and their decision-making bandwidth. Every time you force a mover to make a decision, where does this go? Is this fragile? Should I wrap this? You're consuming that bandwidth, and you're paying for it. The goal is to reserve their bandwidth for the physical work of carrying and loading, which is what they're best at and what you can't do yourself.
You're basically turning the movers into a highly optimized carrying algorithm. Input, labeled boxes in a clear path. Output, boxes in the correct rooms. No branching logic required.
That's the dream, and it's achievable. Now let's get concrete about what you actually do with your hands in the days before the move. I've got 3 takeaways that I think are the highest leverage things anyone can do.
Let's hear them.
The first is the 48-hour rule. 48 hours before the move, do a full walkthrough of your apartment with a notepad. Not your phone, a physical notepad. Identify every single item that needs to be disassembled, every box that needs to be labeled, every piece of furniture that needs to be wrapped, and every obstacle that needs to be cleared from the path. Do not start packing until this list is complete. The list is your master plan, and everything flows from it.
Why a physical notepad?
Because a phone is a distraction machine. You open it to write a note, you see a notification, you forget what you were doing. A notepad is single purpose. Also, you're going to set it down on a box and refer to it throughout the day, and a notepad doesn't require unlocking.
What's the second takeaway?
The mover's tip formula. Standard advice is to tip movers 15-20% of the total bill, but the when matters more than the how much. Pay the tip in cash at the start of the day, not at the end. Hand it to the crew chief and say, "This is for you and the team. I appreciate you taking care of my stuff today." This creates a psychological incentive structure. The movers know they've already been rewarded, and they're motivated to justify that reward with fast, careful work.
You're reversing the incentive. Instead of dangling the tip as a performance bonus, you're giving it up front as a gesture of trust.
In practice, this often saves you money. A $100 tip up front can save you $200 in overtime fees because the crew is working at their best pace from the first minute. Movers talk about this among themselves. A client who tips up front gets remembered and gets better service.
The third takeaway?
The new apartment prep checklist, which we touched on, but I want to make it explicit. Before the movers arrive at the new place, do these 5 things. 1. Turn on every light. 2. Open every interior door. 3. Lay down drop cloths on the main walkways. 4. Place a trash bag and scissors in every room. 5. Do a final check of the color-coded tape on the door frames to make sure nothing fell off. That's it. 5 minutes of work that eliminates an hour of friction.
I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier about the Chicago case study, because I think it illustrates a broader point. The 2 clients had the same crew, the same truck, the same floor plan, and one took nearly twice as long. That's not a marginal improvement. That's a completely different experience.
The difference was entirely in the pre-move systems. The first client had a labeling system, had furniture disassembled, had a clear path, had boxes sorted by weight. The second client had none of that. The movers were working just as hard in both cases, but in the second case, they were spending most of their time figuring out what to do next instead of doing it.
The movers aren't the variable. The preparation is the variable.
And I think this connects to a misconception a lot of people have, which is that professional movers will bring their own systems and you don't need to worry about it. Professional movers are great at what they do, but they can't read your mind. They don't know which bedroom is the master and which is the office. They don't know that you want the bookshelves on the north wall. They don't know that this box marked kitchen actually contains your grandmother's china and needs extra care. All of that context lives in your head, and if you don't externalize it through labels and instructions, the movers have to extract it from you in real time, which is slow and expensive.
There's a parallel here to something we've talked about before with decluttering. The pre-move phase is really about making decisions once, in advance, so you're not making them under pressure. Decision fatigue on moving day is real, and it leads to bad choices.
Bad choices lead to broken items, lost boxes, and movers who are frustrated because they're being asked to improvise. A mover who's improvising is a mover who's not following a system. And a mover who's not following a system is going to cost you time and money.
Let's talk about the remote move scenario, because I think this is becoming more common. People are moving between cities for work. Sometimes they can't be present for the move itself. How do you apply these principles when you're 500 miles away?
The remote move is the ultimate test of these systems, because you can't be there to answer questions at all. Everything has to be documented in advance. You need a floor plan of the new apartment with every room labeled, and you need to send that to the movers ahead of time along with photos of the color-coded tape system. You need to designate a local contact, a friend, a real estate agent, someone, who can be at the new apartment to let the movers in and do the final walkthrough. And you need to over-communicate about fragile items and special handling requirements.
The remote move forces you to be even more systematic, which is probably why it's so stressful for people who haven't built the systems.
If you've got the tape system, the weight sorting, the go bag, and the disassembly done, a remote move is stressful but manageable. If you've got none of that, a remote move is a nightmare because you're not there to put out fires. You're just getting panicked phone calls from the crew chief.
I want to ask about one more thing that I think gets overlooked, which is the post-move reset. You mentioned a 30-minute cleanup phase, but what does that actually look like?
The post-departure cleanup is about closing the loop. Once the movers leave the old apartment, you do one final sweep. Check every closet, every cabinet, every drawer. Look behind doors. Check the top of the refrigerator. Check the bathroom vanity. People leave things behind constantly, and once you hand over the keys, getting back in is a hassle. Then you take photos of every room to document the condition. This protects your security deposit. Then you do a quick clean of the high traffic areas. Just a broom sweep, nothing deep, so the landlord's walkthrough doesn't start with a bad impression.
At the new apartment?
At the new apartment, the 30-minute reset is about making the space livable for the first night. You don't need to unpack everything. You need to set up the bed, find the go bag, locate the shower curtain and toilet paper, and get the kitchen functional enough to make coffee the next morning. Everything else can wait. The goal is to end the day with a place to sleep and a path to the bathroom. That's it.
The metric for a successful moving day is not everything is unpacked. It's I can sleep and shower and make coffee.
Unpacking takes weeks. Moving day is about transportation. Don't confuse the two. Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the late 1600s, a Jesuit missionary in French Guiana transcribed a now extinct Caribbean language into a phonetic script of his own invention. The manuscript was lost for over 2 centuries until a botanist found it pressed inside the binding of a plant catalog in a Paris archive in 1902. Linguists now consider it the only surviving record of that entire language family.
A language preserved because someone used it as bookbinding filler. That's either tragic or miraculous, depending on how you look at it.
The universe has a strange filing system.
Here's my open question for listeners. What is the one thing you wish you'd known before your last move? The trick, the tool, the piece of advice that would have saved you an hour or a headache? We want to hear your pro tips. Send them in through the website.
As remote work keeps normalizing, more people are going to be doing moves between cities, sometimes without being there in person. The remote move is the next frontier. and the principles we talked about today. Eliminate decision points. Externalize your context. Front load the cognitive work. Those scale to any distance.
This has been my weird prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the trains running. If you got something out of this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps more than you'd think.
I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. We'll catch you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.